Mr. Jewett, reel 10. What date did you join the Ashanti?
It was the... July in 1941, July 1941.
And what are your memories of actually going to and joining the ship? Where, for example, did you join it?
Well, that's right. Well, I went from the boys' training... boys' establishment, it wasn't a training... It was part of Borstal, the old Borstal school, which we'd taken over for boys, you see. And we... they marched us down to the draft, mustered at Chatham Barracks, and they marched us onto the train. Now, we got onto the train at Chatham Barracks, in the siding at Chatham Barracks, and it actually took us the thick end of 24 hours to get to Newcastle upon Tyne. It went via Liverpool, Glasgow, you name it, it went all round the world. But that was done because of careless talk costs lives. They didn't want anybody to know where or what draft it was. It was all, you never told your family or anything where what ship you were going or where you were going. We didn't know where we were going, actually. We just went on a train with the Ashanti draft. That was the boys and all the ship's company were all put onto the train. And we got on the train, and it was about 24 hours afterwards, after we'd been through Glasgow, we're looking out the window, where the hell are we? Like, you know, Liverpool, Glasgow, you God's true crew, then we come back, all around the world. Eventually, we landed up in Newcastle. Landed up, and the whole ship's company cleared in Newcastle Station. They got out of the, disembarked from the train, we've all got our kit bags and hammocks and things. Now they were all loaded onto a big lorry, a Royal Naval lorry, all the ship's stuff, and the draft fell in. Now that was one of the funniest things that I ever saw. Now we had about 200 men and boys, you know, because I think there was about 14 boys altogether. There wasn't many boys on there. It was about 14 or 15, and we were falling in. And when the draft fell in, you saw all sorts of people. This is the first time I realised about the segregation of and seniority of ranks in the Navy was in that draft, because you had people, who looked like chief petty officers, and they were chief petty officer sailmakers, shipwrights, supply assistants, all sorts of things, wearing petty officers and chief petty officers' uniforms. But the man who took charge of the draft was a leading seaman, what we call a killick, a leading seaman. He was a gunnery rating. And he stood out the front, and he was the one who called the draft to attention. There were 200 of us. He said, fall in threes. And we outside the portico of the central station in Newcastle, fall in threes. And he was the one who gave the orders. Everybody's fallen in. And all these chiefs and POs are there. And this... leading seaman, you know, in an old, you know, in a collar, you know, sort of a ratings, a naval rating. He was the man who took charge, and he marched them to the left, and he marched us down. We went down to the bank and went onto a small river steamer at the quayside, and we embarked on the quayside. We still hadn't seen our ship, so we marched down the steep bank. To the quayside, got onto the ship. But that was the first time, actually, I realised that the executive branch were in charge of the Navy. Nobody else. It was only a gunnery or torpedo rating who actually were the Navy. And that was the first real I realised that, you know, that all these people dressed as chiefs and that weren't chiefs. They got the money. But, of course, it was a naval ploy to pay these people what they call trade union rates. They couldn't pay them because the ratings didn't get as much money, so they had to give them that sort of rate. But they weren't actually fighting. They weren't the fighting personnel. They were the other ranks. Well, we got on this boat, and then we went to War's End, and we disembarked at War's End, and that's where at Swan Hunters, the shipyard of Swan Hunters, Wigham Richardson's, where the Ashanti lay in wait, and she was a beautiful ship. She'd run aground about 6 months before off the north coast, and they towed her into Swan Hunters, and she was in two halves. The first half, I think, was starboard side was built at one shipyard, and the port side, the entire port side, was built at Swan Hunters in the which, and the poor old ship, poor old Ashanti, suffered because of that throughout her life. I think normally she would have been scrapped, but there was a war on, so they couldn't, they wouldn't dare. So they rescued her, and we took over the, we went aboard the Shanty, and she, the tribal class destroyers, they are about 1,800 tons. They got six twin 4.7s, and their HAS, their dual purpose guns, and one twin 4-inch gun. Mounted aft, she was an anti-aircraft gun with a full end. She was pure anti-aircraft gun, She was a 4-inch, slightly less, and she was magnificent. And she had multiple pom-poms and .5s at that time. She had .5s on each side and pom-poms, and she was a really magnificent looking ship. Like they look like yachts, you know. They're beautiful things, very high, very fast. 36, and the Ashanti was the fastest of the lot. We could top up 36 knots on trials. We topped 36 knots, and that's a very fast ship, I can tell you. So anyway, here's this wonderful ship, and we looked, and as we had to fall in, and as we went aboard, the gunner's mate, I became one of those later on, the gunner mate, he hands out all the, he was sitting there, and you got in front of it, and his name. Card, and he stamps your card, and he gives you a card, and on each card was all your duties, every duty you've got is on that card, like your defence stations, action stations, and all the rest of it. I looked at this and I thought, God, this is good. So I didn't know anything about it, didn't know what it was, what I had to do or anything, but I was quite happy. Went with the other boys, and the boys' mess deck was forward, just like below decks. The boys' mess deck on a destroyer, on the Ashanti anyway, was below decks, and that was that was my introduction. Now the first night we were aboard, got aboard, got settled down, and the following day we cleared lower decks. The pipe, they have a tannoy system with the boy. You know, the bosun's call comes over, and he says, you know, do you hear there? Clear lower decks, fall in on the jetty. Well, we cleared lower decks. And about the following day, and that was when we were introduced to the horse. Now the horse is affectionately known as Horsey Onslow, Commander Onslow, and he comes from a very, very famous naval family. In fact, there's a ship named called HMS Onslow, which was named after his grandfather, an admiral. But he cleared lower deck, and rumour had it that he'd lost a brother in the war. Anyway, he stood up. We all stood in the dockyard, and he was addressing the ship's company. You know, the commissioning address. And he didn't mince his words. He told us straight, said, "You are going to have a very exciting," and he told him, "and a tough war." He says, "I intend to fight." He said, "This ship," we could tell, oh, crumbs, we've got death or glory bloke here, all right. Bye, did we not? Well, anyway, we got aboard, and you get to know people. You know, none of us knew each other as any other ship, but she was predominantly a professional peacetime crew. HMS Somali had been sunk, and the whole of the Somali, which was a peacetime crew, was taken and plonked onto the Ashanti. So the Ashanti has a ready-made crew. They all knew, everybody knew where everything was, because one tribal class destroyer is exactly the same as another. And it was a ready-made trained shoot, except for me, because I was one of the few that weren't on the Somali. So of course we went on there, and that was my first day on the Ashanti, and I love that ship. For the moment I got on the Ashanti, I thought, this is great. Whereas the Phoebe was a big impersonal cruiser. A destroyer's not like that. A destroyer's, every bit of a destroyer belongs to you. It's your ship, and you've got a certain enormous pride. And she was, she transpired to be one of the happiest ships in the Navy. She was, as I and then I'll stop. But that was my first day, and the first day, like any, all you do, you acclimatise with all the most silly things you wouldn't think of. For example, where do you stow your hammock? You know, because in the Navy, you don't sleep in bunks, you know. You sleep in hammocks. And you've got to know how to lash a hammock up. You're taught this as a boy. I mean, a boy can do it blindfold. But you lash a hammock. Hammocks have to be lashed extremely tightly. I don't know if I've told you this, because if the ship is torpedoed, they use hammocks to block up the hole. Yes. Yes. And they've got to be... where do you stow them? Things like that. Where are the most important things? Where is the goffer bar? Where is the naffy? Where do they keep the naffy? That was the most important thing. That's where you bought your chocolate and things like that. And they're very important things in life, that, for a boy. About the most important.
I was going to ask you, if you could describe to me the various parts and elements of the ship. You've mentioned guns and where your boys were, but the other parts, the messing situation,
yes,
and so on.
Well, that's another thing. You see, you mentioned messing situation. You see, on a cruiser, it's at above, it's what they call general messing. That's where the cooks in the galley produce all the food. They cook the food and everything, you just come out and serve it out. In a destroyer, it's known as canteen messing, which is a very different system. In a destroyer, every mess, and I was in the boys' mess, of course, every mess is allocated a certain amount of money to purchase their own food. So you have to go and buy your flour, your lard, and your whatever you want, you have to put into to Jack Dusty, and you have to pay for it. It comes out of the mess funds. And sometimes, if you starve yourself, you have a rebate. You have some money to come back. But we didn't. We were always boys. Boys actually got an extra ration above the men. We got more money than the men for food, you know. So the cook of the mess, for example, every day there's a cook's rota, and there were two boys, and same as up aloft in there were two ratings. There were the cooks of the mess. It's their job to scrub the mess every morning when the divisions is on, when they scrub the mess out, clean it out so it's immaculate, and they've got to prepare the meals. They've got to prepare the dinner. That's where you learn to make pot mess, duffs, all sorts of things. I could cook for 20 people, no bother at all. I couldn't cook for me and Miriam, like, you know. But if you asked me to cook a sultana pudding for a dozen, you know, I could do that, no bother at all. And you learn that as a seaman, because it's called canteen messing, and that's the way it's done. So you got you prepared your food, you know, soup, potatoes, what have you. Then you took it up to the galley, and they cooked it, you see. And then at lunchtime, like dinner time, you know, when the hands come down for the meal, then you come and collected it. And then the senior rating of the mess upstairs, it's the killick, the leading seaman. He dishes out the on the plate, and then you sit down and you eat it. And that's the way. Now the other things, you had to know the geography of the ship backwards. I mean, you really did. On a destroyer, it wasn't difficult, because what we called the paint shop was in the bowels of the ship, and there was a fellow called an old AB called Trampy Walker, three badge Trampy Walker. They used to have meths up there, you know, to make the paint, you know, and white spirits. He used to drink it half the time. He was as drunk as a lord, and he perpetual pickled was Trampy, but he was a good. He knew his job, I think it must have cost the. When it came to painting ships, there were more paintbrushes lost over the side. I think they must have cost a fortune in paintbrushes, because it was easy, you know, you're painting the ship, and for the thing to slip out of your hand, and bingo, well, you weren't going to dive in the sea for a paintbrush that was floating down. But, God, it's truth, you just get another one. But, because ships, you know, were camouflaged, and of course they have a plan. It wasn't just antiquity. Each ship's got a camouflage plan that's provided with a paint, and you had to sort of paint according to the plan, to the camouflage plan. Over the side, all the ratings used to go over the side on a stage, and there was two or three of you on a stage. You'd paint a ship in no time, in a day, easy, half a day, you could paint the whole ship, because the it's all hands to the pump, like, you know.
Was that usually in harbour?
In harbour, oh yes, of course. And then it would dry pretty quickly, and then as soon as you went out. Then you come to the bridge, and you had the bridge, you had to know all the parts of the bridge where the navigation officers are. The transmitting station, which is one of my stations, was the transmitting station. That's called the TS now. Transmitting station means the transmitting of information to the guns. I mean, the guns have got to have, they've got what they call a dreyer's table, fuse keeping clock Mark III, and an AFCC, Admiralty Fire Control. One was low angle, one high angle. Oh, it's a bit technical. But the transmitting, the TS's crew, there's about five of the TS's crew in the transmitting station. They used to send out the gun elevation and training, like after it come down from the spotting office and so forth, spotting officer and above, and all the wind speed and everything, which was put into it was really a computer, really, a sort of mechanical computer. And that was transmitted to each of the guns, you know, so that they got gun elevation and gun training, you know. But that's the sort of thing you had to learn where everything was. Stoker's mess deck, the baths, which were very important, because sailors are very clean, you know. You wouldn't believe it, but most sailors, in fact, bath twice a day. They bath in the morning when they get up. That bathe, you know, with showers, you know, and put a clean shift on. Then they do their work, and then before they go ashore, they go down and they have a shower and a clean shift to go ashore. So that's twice a day a sailor washes. Don't make any mistake about that. They're the cleanest people under the sun. I mean, it's very rarely that you find most civilians who can boast that they shower twice a day, but that's true. The Navy do. They're very, 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 very clean that way. In actual fact, if you ever got a skate, it didn't happen in my experience, but I know the drill. If you ever got a skate, now a skate is a dirty sailor. He would not be tolerated. They would scrub him down. They'd put it up and say, come on, get yourself up there and get yourself cleaned up, you know. And if he didn't, they'd take it, bat it in. They used to get soft soap, this terrible soft soap they used to, and they'd suji wuji, and they'd grab hold of him, and they'd give him a right old going over, you know. He would be dealt with. Well, you couldn't have dirty people in a ship like that. They're close confined borders. I haven't come to life on it.
What about sick bay? Where was that in relation to?
Well, there was the sick bay was a compartment about 3 feet by 3 feet, and there was a leading SBA, what they call a sick berth attendant. That was, and he was there. Oh, and you had, I beg your pardon, we were privileged on the Ashanti. We had a two-ringer who was a doctor. We had a two-ringer. He was a sick bay. It was a tiny little place. And, if you had minor, it only dealt with minor injuries, but anything was sort of major, you were taken. There were no facilities on a destroyer for anything like anything really that need hospitalisation, even the slightest. Even little splinters that you were whipped off. There was no place on the destroyer for that sort of thing, you know.
And there must have been storage space.
Yes, there were. Of course, there were stores. The everywhere had stores. On a destroyer, they had the most amazing. I'm still a boy at the moment, but moving up. But I'll tell you some stories about the men that have been coming. There's the magazine compartments, ammunition in ship, of course, the same as any other ship, but the magazines and showrooms, the 4-inch gun was what is known as fixed ammunition. That was where you have a shell which is connected to the cartridge, and all you do is put it on the loading tray. This wasn't my job, put it on the, and they used to swing the loading tray in front of the breech. And he used to ram it up. They used to have the loader used to have a special glove. He used to get it up and ram it up, and the breech, very powerful spring, used to slam shut and knock his hand up. But the shell was in the. But you had to know you didn't do it like that. You'd lose your fingers. But you did it with
the fist.
With the fist, and it was fixed ammunition. But the 4.7s was was not fixed ammunition. It wasn't exposed cordite, but it was in a cylinder, a cartridge, you see, a cartridge cylinder, shell case, you know. So, but that was in two halves. That was silly. It was rammed up just the same, but the loading tray used to go across it, and it was all semi, what they call semi-automatic. But everybody on a ship like that is extremely proud of their own gun, and whatever they do, that is a source of pride. You know, well, you've got to, it's self-preservation. Everything's got to work like clockwork. You know, when the time comes, when it's necessary. Believe me, as time went on, it was necessary. And we're in harbour. We eventually got to know our officers, and they came down. What happens is, at divisions, you all fall in, and your petty officers and your leading seamen sort of take charge of the troops, of the able seamen and ordinary seamen and boys, and you're given jobs about the ship, cleaning the ship, scrubbing down, polishing, keeping the ship shape, you know, and in Bristol fashion, as we say. And there's all sorts of other things to do. All the time the ship is being tested, the guns are being tested, they've got gun parts of the gun's crew, elevation and training, greasing up and all that sort of thing, all ready, and so that everything is in impeccable condition. The range takers always setting their range finder, well, it is only one who sets his range finder and everything, and the control part is testing their communications and so forth. This is constant. There's usually about half an hour a day for all control parties close up, and they go through the drill just when you're in harbour. I'm talking about harbour routine.
This is before you sail.
Before you sail, yeah, all the time, every day this is done, so the ship is absolutely in tip-top condition the whole time. Well, it wasn't the Shandy, I don't know about other ships, but by George, we had a Lieutenant Tony Bailey. He was terrific, and he was a crackerjack officer. He joined us, and he was a real, he knew his stuff. And
what was his responsibility?
He was the first lieutenant. What they called Jimmy the One. Our Jimmy the One was the first lieutenant, and he was strict but fair, and nobody minded. Everybody respected him because he knew his stuff. He really did, and we liked him for it. Actually, in fact, most of the men liked that. We liked our officers. There weren't any duckers.
Was he at the? I know you have your commanding officer, the captain, but was he as number one in effect running the ship?
Yeah. The commanding officer. You don't see much of him. Jimmy the One's the man that sort of. He's. You don't see him much, but he's the one who really delegates all the. He walks around, makes your mind. You don't see him much. But he walks around and then thinks. For example. Silly thing you might think, but supposing with a sea boat, for example, you know, all the sea boats and they all had to be cleaned out every, they all were scrubbed out every day. All those boats, you know, the motor cutters and the skimming dish and the whalers, they all had to be cleared. They had boat parties. Each one of the crew, because each were allocated. I was a whaler's crew actually, I had to go to the whaler and help scrub it out and keep it. Everything was immaculately clean. And ropes, for example, it was. Heinous crime for a rope to be left in a tangle. It had to be neatly coiled down in actually, you know, in clockwise fashion. So it made a sort of a complete new, and it was all belaying to a cleat. If the bosun, chief bosun's mate, happened to see a boat, and you had to take one round turn and then crossed over like that around the cleat of a boat's fall. The fall is the rope that lowers, and if it was done incorrectly, oh boy. You would think that somebody committed murder, you know. It was ridiculous.
But there was a serious purpose.
Oh, of course, because it's correct. Because it could jam, you see. It was a serious purpose because once you took when you were lowering a boat, once you took the rope off, you were then left with the two round turns, and that was your control. You were then in control of that boat, or not in control, whichever the case may be. And if it had been put in properly, what happened? If it was put in correctly, the rope used to jam, and the sea boat, instead of lowering, it would be stuck halfway. So the bows of the ship, the boat might be going down, and the other one's stuck halfway. Well, you've got a rope's fall that you can't do anything with. And what a carry on that was! You had to I did see it happen once. You had to have about three or four ratings holding the boat while somebody taking the weight of the boat while somebody came and unraveled it and then started and then wound it on correctly, onto the cleat correctly, so you could then lower it. I did see it happen once, only once.
And these would presumably also stand in for escape if the ship was sinking, these boats.
Oh, that's right, they were.
Were there sufficient boats for all the crew?
Oh, yes. And there was not only boats, there were what were called Carly rafts. There were the Carly boat, there were Carly floats. And these, they were equipped with food like that. These, they were sort of Horlicks tablets and water and so that in each Carly raft, and flares, of course. And of course, we all had life-saving jackets. You know, when we went to sea, you wore these cork. They were very heavy cork life. In fact, one of the things you had to do, there was a way to jump into the sea. You had to be taught that. These cork things, you had to hold the neck with your two hands when you jumped into the sea, because otherwise you could break your neck, believe it or not. With those cork jackets, you go into the sea, the cork jacket stopped and come up, could easily break your neck. See, you had to hold the top of the cork jacket to stop your neck being broken when you jumped in the sea. That, a lot of people don't know that. Another bit of useless information for you. But there it is. There's so much that, you know, it comes back to me, but there was so much fun in being a boy, because boys are actually rascals. You've got to believe it. They are terrors, they really are. And you've got to... I had a fight. I'll tell you what the fight was. But on every ship, they had an SRE, you know, sound reproduction equipment, and there was a record. This record, one side was the Warsaw Concerto, and the other one was Tchaikovsky's Piano Concerto in A. I can't remember. It was on a piano piece. And I was pretty well up. I was always musical for my family. I was very musical. And I said, that's Piano Concerto in A, Tchaikovsky. This chap said, it's not the Warsaw Concerto. I said, it's not. Because that was on the other side, actually. I said, no. And he got to this. He said, I'll bet you a pound. So I said, right, I'll bet you a pound. So I said, right, so we went and checked out, and of course I was right. I said, come on, that's a pound you owe me. You're not getting that. Well, the fun started then, believe you me. That's how things happen. But as I say, that is the survival business. Because I didn't tell you, but I was an extremely good boxer.
Yes, we've got that. Yeah.